our first guest on the program this afternoon. I'm going to call him a legend just to embarrass him. He's a former NFL general manager, scout, executive, a pioneer of sports broadcasting, author of the wonderful book with Ron Borges, Present at the Creation, and quite frankly, the smartest person I know, Upton Bell, joins us. Hello, Upton.
None of the above. Hello to you, Rich. And I lead off today with something a little different than sports.
What have you got for us?
Probably the best TV series I've ever seen.
Wow.
It's a show on Netflix called Fauda, F-A-U-D-A. And it is the most engrossing thing I've seen. It runs actually 5 years. I'm only in the second year. And it's based upon facts or a true story about an undercover group in Israel who fight the Palestinians. And every episode, and each year there's about 10 episodes, and they don't run any more than 30 to 45 minutes. But it gives you a look at, you know, we try to understand, we see what's going on with Netanyahu and all the criticism about, you know, trying to destroy the Palestine Liberation Organization and many of the other things that go on daily. But this brings it home to you, the senselessness of the killing on both sides and the ending, like Israel just went in and cleaned out a terrorist group as they do every 5 or 6 years or something like that. And the analysis afterwards is, yeah, but they'll have to come back in another year or so because of the hate and the feeling that is the Israelis are really dominating them and crowding them into a very, very small area. There's bitterness on both sides, but this gives you an understanding while giving you every 45 to 50 minutes, something that you say, and it's the only time I can think of that I actually said, I can't wait for the next one. I'll start out on a night with all the news going on. I have three TV sets, so I can watch everything. And I will start out and say, I'm just going to watch one episode. About four episodes later, I'm there at midnight, and I can't think of anything else that I've ever seen, whether it's in the movies or on television, that it gives you an understanding of what's going on, but also you're on the edge of your seat. And finally, you realize how extraordinarily savage the feelings are on both sides, and also understand there's no answer, none whatsoever.
Well, if you recommend it, I will check it out. Fauda. Yeah, I'm reading about it right now. 48 episodes so far.
Yeah, and the thing is, I'd love for your audience, you know, somewhere along the line, if maybe you recommend it, at least watch it and, you know, give you their opinion, because it is today's news. And yet, the way they present it, the actors are terrific. It's a Jewish production, but it's pretty fair, I would say, on both sides, showing the hatred on both sides and showing the heroes and the villains. I mean, this is like going back in the 40s or 50s when they used to have these series on that you could see in the movie theaters at the end of a matinee. You know, Pearls of Pauline or something like that where somebody's hanging on the edge of a cliff and they'll say, continue next week. Well, in this case, you know, you can keep going through it, and it's become so popular, there's now a spinoff after 5 years of it with one of the main characters in it, Duran, who's always at the edge of being in trouble, being thrown out of the Israeli group, and his whole story, and actually falling in love with one of the terrorists' wife. And, I mean, it's so complex. I know we do sports, but this is something really, I think, worthwhile.
Well, we talk about everything here, as you know, so I'm happy. I will check that out on your recommendation. Now, I want to ask you, Upton, because you have seen both sides. Your father, as we know, was not only commissioner of the NFL, but a team owner. Your mother was an actress. Where do you come down on the strike by the Writers Guild and the Screen Actors Guild?
I'm with the actors. I'm one of the actors and writers. I'm somewhat familiar, never met him, with Bob Iger. Friends of mine know him pretty well. He's, you know, a brilliant guy. But basically, this is squeezing the actors, and particularly the writers, even the people who are stunt people in movies and for TV series. Basically, they're just squeezing them out. They're not going to give them their full pay. They're going to siphon a certain amount off. I mean, but it also says to me that I think since the pandemic, and maybe leading into it, Rich, that there is a lot of trouble. That you know, so Netflix is actually, and I like them a lot, but everybody's looking for material.
Mm.
Everybody has, whether it's Disney, Netflix, you name it, they're all looking to turn out, you know, of different projects and series, like Fauda, which has been one of the more successful ones, but they have to keep, you know, churning it out. And where are they going to get story ideas? Where are they going to get the actors? Well, what they do now is, instead of a major movie like Oppenheimer is coming out, which is fascinating. I know a lot about him. And Barbie, they're two major ones, but many of the other ones that are being made are, you know, being made strictly for streaming. And they don't want to pay the actors. They don't want to pay the writers. So I'm on their side, and always to a degree, except the real superstars. I used to talk to my mother about this. She was, at one time, both the most beautiful woman in America. She at one time was one of the biggest stars on Broadway. She went to Hollywood and made two movies, did not like it, and came back again. And she said, unless you're really at the very top, no matter what contract you sign, they own you. So I'm on their side. You know, a lot of people probably don't know, one of the greatest writers in American history, winner of the Nobel Prize, William Faulkner, wrote movie screenplays for next to nothing.
Right, in the 1930s and 40s.
Yep. So they're always, Disney is so powerful. Iger is so powerful. You know, they can essentially tell people, screw off, you don't play the game by our rules, forget it. So, and it was interesting to see that the whole cast of Oppenheimer, which I'm anxious to see, I don't hardly go in the movie theaters anymore since the pandemic, but I'm going to see this. So, but they walked out the London premiere of Oppenheimer. The whole cast, Matt Damon, every one of them walked out. And it's interesting because usually the big stars don't walk the picket line, but the stars are coming out to walk on the picket line. That must mean something.
Well, there's a great deal of solidarity, and I think a big part of this is the concern over artificial intelligence and the impact that could have on the business.
Not only in the business, on everything. How do you know who you're talking to? Look what's happening. Two of the biggest, and one that just came out, I'm familiar with because I was somewhat friendly with Wilt Chamberlain. They're using, in his documentary, they're using his voice and superimposing it on actually, he's been dead for how long?
Right.
So, yes, I mean, I think it's scary for everybody. And again, how do you know? You can go on. You and I do a lot of social media. You can go on. I never know, really, who's even tweeting out or what's happening because you don't know where it's coming from. I 60 Minutes last week did a whole thing, almost an hour on artificial intelligence, And the people who actually helped invent it.
Right, I saw that.
Worried about.
Yeah, it is frightening. We're talking with Upton Bell here on Downtown. Upton, can you tell the story? You hinted at it in our email conversations. Can you tell me the story of the obituary writer?
Which one? Which obituary do you want?
Well, I don't know. You hinted that there was a good story about an obituary writer reaching out to you.
I'm trying to think of.
I didn't realize there had been more than one. Are they all calling you?
Yep. No. This is unreal. I can think of all of the things that have happened in my life, but about a week ago, that's right, I had emailed you on it. About a week ago, I get this frantic email followed by another person calling me and saying, listen, this person's been trying to get in touch with you. Now, he didn't say what the person was. I said, well, you know what, unless I know who he is, have him email me. I said, I just want to be careful with somebody I don't know. So it turns out that this guy is the obituary writer to the New York Times and the Washington Post. And I'm sure people are, whether it's the Boston Globe or whoever it is preparing an obituary on me and everybody else. And I'm saying, why would somebody call me about my own obituary and interview me on this? And so it turns out this guy was looking. He said, you're one of the few people. He introduced himself. And I asked him, I said, are you asking me to give you information on my presumed death? And he said, no. He said, actually, he said, your name has been given to me by more people. He said, I'm writing an obituary on Raymond Berry. I said, Raymond Berry is not dead yet. He said, yes. He just turned 90. He is not dead yet. He said, but we need to get a lot more information on him. And he said, I'm doing this for the Washington Post, mainly because he was closer in playing in Baltimore. And I said, well, so I spent the next hour telling this guy all the stories about Raymond Berry, the first time I met him in 1960, how I got to know him. There's somebody also doing a book on the life of Carol Rosenblum. I've got more people calling me figuring I'm going to die pretty soon, so they want to get all the info. I told them all the stories about Raymond Berry. I was actually one of the first people in 1960 at training camp. Raymond only practiced for the team the last half an hour to 45 minutes because the rest of the time he was on the side by himself. The coaches and the players had no problem with it. In practicing all these crazy things, you know, he tried to enlarge in his hands by using and inventing silly putty. He would strap himself to a tree, ready for this, with a rubber thing, and practice running away from the tree. and what he would do is he'd have two or three people, he'd wear them out, that would throw him footballs at all different angles, shoe tops, too high, too low, on the side, left, right. And so they asked me, they said, would you go over and do it for a while? Knowing I had played basketball, I said, you had a decent arm, would you do it? And I did. And I began to learn really about somebody that probably was one of the most brilliant people I've been around, particularly as a football player. Thought out everything that he did, every move. I mean, and if you look, going back on old film, here's a guy that didn't have particularly great speed. One leg was slightly shorter than the other. Didn't really have big hands until he really started to develop his fingers. And would keep copious notes about everything. His wife, whom he married after, I think, going out with her for two or three years, they would come in the off season and he would have her type up notes on to himself on all the different moves he would make and the reason why and studying other players. I mean, I've never seen a guy like this, even to today, that actually made himself one of the greatest receivers in history. So I gave this guy all sorts of stories about Raymond and what I knew about him. He was the first player that I met when I walked through the training camp in 1960. He and Big Daddy Lipscomb and Gino Marchetti and Art Donovan, all basically, except for Big Daddy, who threw his life away, they all went to the Hall of Fame. Different type of player than today. No social media, thank God. and basically said, Mr. Bell, I'm Raymond Berry. Saw a lot of your father. Welcome to the Colts. You think that's going to happen today? And you know what? In some ways, it's a shame because you get a completely different picture of a player today. Bigger, stronger, quicker, faster, all the things you want to talk about. But the humanity is gone because you're really, and I don't blame the player, you're basically promoting yourself.
Right.
You're a physical and financial entity, and that's that's what you do. Who really gives a damn about somebody? Can you imagine Raymond Berry tweeting Big Daddy Lipscomb, Daddy, this is Raymond. Please stay out of those drug dens.
And I want to let people know, too, that your wonderful collection, the archives, the Upton Bell Collection, is still available for people to see Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. all summer. It's in the Robert S. Cox Special Collections and University Archives Research Center at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. I'm hoping to get down there this summer. Speaking of football, Upton, how do you think this is going to pan out for the Jets getting Aaron Rodgers late in his career? Will that work?
I think so. I'm probably one of the few. Everybody hates Rodgers, and he's a weird guy. Everybody here hates Rodgers. Everybody here hates the Jets. And I say to them, you better start worrying about yourself because you could end up in fourth place. But I think I'm one of the few. Without Rodgers, even though their record didn't quite indicate it last year, they might have the best young team in all of football. With all of these young players coming up and coming into their prime. And if Rodgers can have just a decent year, I think they're going to be tough to beat. Now, again, he could blow up. Who knows? You know, he could hang himself upside down and say, you know, I'm communing with the Maharishi or something. and there'll be a lot of stories about it. And I do think that Hard Knocks, he's talked about a little bit today, will expose, you know, all of these oddities. But it, again, it depends upon how the Jets control it. Here's the question I have. How have the Patriots, all of these years, how have they avoided not being on Hard Knocks? I know Belichick doesn't basically, you know, he'll stonewall you to death. But how can a team that has, you know, won six world championships, six Super Bowls, been one of the more popular teams with, until Belichick let them go, with Brady, some people consider the greatest of all time. I say he's the greatest of his time. But how they escaped it? You know, they'll be eligible next year if they, again, are lousy this year.
So. Well, I think, yeah, they've been just good enough to avoid qualifying, right?
Yeah, they have. But again, I mean, who knows what happens this year? It could be Belichick's last year or maybe next to last year. I mean, that situation here is really interesting for all of the people that listen to you, Rich, is that basically they finally got an offensive coordinator, Billy O'Brien, I think more forced by Kraft than anybody. Last year was one of the biggest disasters in football that I've ever seen with those two coordinators that couldn't coach anything.
Right.
And they're coming into another year where basically they now have to find out if Mac Jones is any good. Was it the Mac Jones of the first year, or was it last year in spite of the bad coaching that he got? I mean, there are a lot of questions out there. One of the things that to me is bothersome, I mean, I don't care, it's their problem, but you know that the Belichick Mac Jones situation is not very good. And I'm sure Belichick has never gotten over that he called Nick Saban and wanted to, you know, discuss with him his problems here and then his attitude, you know, on the football field, which, you know what, I can't blame him in some ways with those two idiots. but basically, now Kraft invites him to his multi-million dollar party one day before the white party, which is you have to dress in white for that other phony friend of Kraft's on the Hamptons. And what happens? He invites him. Now, maybe Belichick was invited, or Belichick's not big of those things anyway. But what does it say? You know, there's no other, Devin McCourty was invited, but he's, you know, his career is over. But you didn't see any other Patriot players there. And to me, it sent a message that enabled Ben Bowen of the Boston Globe to write an article then saying, you know, it's the opposite now. Kraft's kind of in charge, and Belichick's on the hot seat. Why would you make things any worse by singling this out and inviting him there? I mean, it's a tug of war, and Kraft's got a huge ego. So we'll see what happens with that. But this is a key season, because if they go 7-9. You know, 7-10, something like that. I doubt if he'll fire Belichick. If it were me, I'd fire him. I mean, if it were me, now I'm talking from a football standpoint. When he brought back two guys that cost the Patriots nothing, here comes the judge, and Matt Patricia. When he did that, I would have sat down from a football standpoint and told Bill that basically I'm not saying it publicly, I'm really against this. I think we're going to throw a season away. You know, people are getting restless. Can't keep getting people to pay $100, $200 to go down there in the middle of nowhere, even with the new $1 billion scoring board. So I would have said, Bill, okay, I'm against this. We're throwing a season away. But I want you to know that if it doesn't turn out well, I hold you responsible. Now, I would have. This is just me. If he went ahead and did it, which he did last year, I would have fired him.
Upton Bell, sharing his thoughts. Always love to hear it. Upton, it is wonderful to talk with you. As always, I'm going to do my best to check out Fouda this weekend. Thank you, as always, for making some time for us, and we'll catch up with you again before too long.
Thank you, Rich. Good to talk to you.
The great Upton Bell here on Downtown.